different expectations, different burdens placed upon you or removed from you. So it's a very interesting dynamic that it's still a big deal. You know, I tweeted this week that I was the only black journalist in the press conference for the only black woman to win a individual gold medal in swimming at the Olympics. And the response to that was overwhelming. And many, many people said, what are you talking about? Why are you pointing this out? What does this mean? What does this matter? So there's still a deep resistance to dealing with the kind of issues that Tony has had to face since he got in the pool and won medals in 2000, and that we cover at the Undefeated, and that I dealt with it a young man. So hopefully we can start to wrestle with some of these things even when the president of the United States is not a black man. If I could say it real quick about Obama, a lot of people don't even want to say that he's the first black president. Oh, he's the first biracial president. You know, Obama and myself both have white moms. What people fail to understand is that you don't get to decide if you're black or not. Society looks at you and decides if you're black. And so Obama gonna stay black, you know, until the end. So if you want to take that away from him, that's think about what you're trying to do to rob somebody of the identity that not only have they chosen for themselves, but that America put on them. So we got a long way to go to wrestle with some of these things, and it's going to take, it might take three or four more black presidents, a Buddhist and a Muslim president, woman in an e-job to solve this problem.
Sports writer Jesse Washington of The Undefeated and Anthony Irvin, who just became the oldest ever individual Olympic swimming gold medalist at the age of 35. And that does it for our show. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with their hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Last month was the hottest ever month on record in recorded history. So we'll talk about the environment and what that heat record represents.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Rags to Riches Jazz Concert and live broadcast on Saturday, August 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Holiday Park in Portland. Swing dance lessons start an evening of live music with breaks included for short informational speeches about the life and history of jazz in the early 20th century. Again, that's Rags to Riches Jazz Concert and live broadcast on Saturday, August 27th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Holiday Park between Northeast 11th Avenue and Holiday Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Mono Village Jazz Festival taking place August 20th and 21st at Portland Metro Arts in Portland. The Mono Village Jazz Festival focuses on Portland's originally composed progressive jazz scene and will feature Jeff Baker, The In-Betweens, the Jessica Smith Big Band, Batita Differente, and many more, including a full lineup on the student stage. Again, that's the Mono Village Jazz Festival taking place August 20th and 21st at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at In Other Words Bookstore in Portland. A panel of African women from different organizations will be highlighting the issues impacting African women across the globe and to highlight the necessity for African women to be united and organized on a worldwide basis against imperialism. Edutainment and childcare will be provided. Again, that's Pan-African Women's Day, Saturday, August 27th at 5:30 p.m. at In Other Words Bookstore, 14 North Killingsworth in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This land is your land, and this land is my land. California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I went a-walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway, saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. I roamed and rambled, and I followed my footsteps to the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me a voice was sounding, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling in the wheat fields waving and the dust clouds rolling. The voice was chanting as the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, and this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. When the sun comes shining, then I was strolling, and the wheat fields waving, and the dust clouds rolling, the voice coming chanting, and the fog was lifting, this land was made for you and me.
This land is your land. What kind of communist garbage is that? What is this, Soviet Russia? That's a bunch of nonsense. That's what Bernie Sanders people listen to at their rallies. Give me the Star-Spangled Banner, man. Give me bombs bursting in the air. You know, nationalist symbolism, the flag and stuff. This socio-political garbage. This land is your land.
You have gone.
No. This land is my land. I own a piece of it. It is mine. It is mine. I can do with it whatever I want. It's mine. Do you understand? And all over this great land, there are other pieces of land that are somebody else's, and they can do whatever they want with it. And there's some people, corporate people, I like to call them, very nice people, corporations. They're huge, and they own a whole bunch of land, and they can do whatever they want with their land, because this is America, and it's theirs, and they own it, and they can do whatever they want.
You have been bundied. You've fallen into the Bundy trap.
Cliven Bundy and his offspring are proud patriots, Joe.
They're in jail.
They're still proud. They're still patriots.
They were
kept down by the man.
Old man Bundy was apparently building a rope in the county jail out of sheets. And I don't know. I guess he had a plan to escape. From jail.
Yeah, it didn't work, though.
It didn't work. Those things rarely do. Anyway, you should all know this is, despite Abe's insane rant, this is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. I'm the rational one. 231-81...
Sorry.
Okay. 231-8187. We're going to talk about a lot of stuff relating to climate change, the public lands. Most of our sourcing comes from the Sierra Club, discussing, for example, the attempted destruction of the Grand Canyon as a national treasure, the Red Rock Wilderness in Utah, the Ears Monument, and the Owyhee Wilderness Proposal in Oregon. Those are just a few of the things upon which we may touch. We'll also talk a little bit about the Bundy phenomenon, the kind of ignorant, I have to say, notion that land belongs to the person who puts his cows on it.
What are you talking about?
What?
Private property is the bedrock, not only of Western democracy, but of Western capitalism. Who are you to tell me I can't do whatever I want with my land? I want to cut down every single tree and sell them to the highest bidder, I can do that. That is my God-given and man-given right. And you can't say anything to convince me otherwise.
What about if there's no God?
Doesn't matter. I'll still pretend there is, and I'll still do whatever I want with my land because it's mine, mine, mine. How can any of your environmental concerns trump that fact?
Trump is the key word there.
Indeed.
Okay, well, we want
to seriously, I'm serious. What's your answer to that question, Joe?
What's the question?
The question is, why do my private property rights, why should they bend to any sort of environmental preservation movement? Why should I not be able to do whatever I want with my land, whenever I want, for whatever reason I want?
Because it isn't really yours.
It is mine.
No.
I have a piece of paper that tells me so.
Yeah, it's a piece
I have centuries of common law tradition that tell me so. It's enshrined in the Constitution that I can't be deprived of it without due process of law.
You know what? I'm going to let our callers answer you.
No. I want you to answer me.
Oh, it's really...
Why should I be an environmentalist, Joe?
Why should you be an environmentalist? Do you have children?
I do.
Do you expect your children might have children?
Yes, and they're all going to do exactly what they want with their land because that's how it is.
What will they eat?
They'll be able to eat some very carefully processed food larded with preservatives and flavorants and texturizers that will sit in the shelves on their land for as long as they want it to sit.
And how will they breathe?
They'll breathe with their lungs, Joe.
I mean, what will they breathe?
They'll breathe the air like everybody does.
And if the air becomes foul?
Well, if the air becomes foul, then we'll move to where the air isn't so foul.
I thought you were going to suggest that they'd grow gills.
Maybe. It's their right if they want to grow gills. They want to go to the gill doctor and have some gills implanted. Well, damn it. That's their right as Americans.
And what will they eat?
I already told you what they'd eat.
You
carefully processed and preserved food.
Okay. Yeah. You're in a weird place today. Very.
I want to know. I want to know why we should be environmentalists. Why should we give a damn?
Well, if you're asking kind of the existential question, why should we give a damn? I can't answer that.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, if you don't see the value, if you don't have the aesthetic consciousness, if you don't have the moral consciousness, if you don't have the implicational awareness of what happens when you desecrate and destroy environments,
I
can't help you.
I'm a capitalist.
No,
Joe.
You're not a
morality
capitalist.
Morality is neither here nor there.
Yeah,
if I let morality intrude on my decision-making, then I'm less of a capitalist than I might be. So you're going to have to build an airtight case that says your environmental mores make enough sense on a holistic level that they transcend the traditional property rights associated with capitalism and democracy.
I'm not going to do that. Our listeners are going to do that.
Okay.
I'm going to depend, and this is important, folks, since you're in this strange place today, I'm going to depend.
It's America, Joe. It may seem strange to you, but it's home to me. Love it or leave it.
Love it or leave it?
Yeah. Why do you hate America so much? I've asked you that many times, and you've never come up with a satisfactory answer.
Why do I hate America
so much? Yeah, clearly you do.
What? Yeah. You're in a strange place today, Abe. Okay. I would welcome any comments from anybody who is rational and willing to discuss the realities of the environment in which we live. And perhaps there are a lot of people out there we don't really know about that really agree with you, that private property is sacred and there is no modification of that rule.
Well, I can virtually guarantee there's a lot of people out there we don't know about.
Oh, those people.
All right, this is KBOO, as Joe mentioned. 503-231-8187 is the number to call to take part in this. Well, we're calling it a conversation. We'll see what happens.
Well, you're in a place.
I am in a place.
You are in a place.
Yeah, I have a larger design, which I hope will become clear.
A larger design.
That's correct.
Like God.
Exactly like God.
I see.
Thank you for that. You can also write to the program on our Facebook page at facebook.com/AbeandJoe, or you can send a tweet on the Twitter machine at HonestAbe72. So what you got?
Well,
hippie.
Hippie? Did you just call me a hippie?
Yeah.
Man, hippie's been dead a long time. Okay, so I've got a lot of material from a lot of sources. And I like the Sierra Club in this context. When I was at Grand Canyon many years ago, first time actually, I think I was there, I walked around the rim on the South Rim, and I came to a place which had a mine and a warning to stay away.
Uh-huh.
And it turned out that it was a uranium mine.
Yeah.
In the canyon.
Yeah, that's somebody else's mine, so you should stay the hell out unless they give you permission.
And of course, they they were producing mildly radioactive uranium material to be shipped to make eventually nuclear power.
Well, right,
material,
yeah.
Or bombs.
Atoms don't split themselves, Joe.
Yeah, they do actually split themselves.
Well, they need a nudge. They need a little nudge first.
Okay. Anyway, the outcome of that at the time was that mine was sort of not economically feasible, and there was real resistance in many communities. And that mine exists, but it's unused right now. But now there's a real revival of an attempt to rebuild it and reuse it and generally change the Grand Canyon area, particularly at the outer edge of the South Rim. They want to build a huge development with housing and places to stay and empty the water table. Yeah, things like that. So the Sierra Club is quite upset. We really need a greater Grand Canyon Heritage National Monument, which would protect 1.7 million acres of wildlands and the species that live there. That's what I think. Also, 12,000 years of human history that haven't really been fully researched, you know, that would be messed up in that process, and an effort to ban the uranium claims. Also to protect the spectacular national playground. Now, I think a lot of our audience probably has been to the Grand Canyon. And it's pretty amazing. You've been to the Grand Canyon.
Never been to the Grand Canyon.
You've never. That's your problem. That's why you're having all this nonsense.
That's one of many,
You go to the Grand Canyon, maybe drop a little acid, you know, look around. Hey, you'll be moved, even without the acid.
The acid supplied to me by capitalists.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I can't deny that. This is important. And there are so many other sites that need to be preserved. I wanted to mention the Sierra Club because it's the old tried and true organization, and I really respect them. But there are other organizations. There's the Red Rock Wilderness Group that's fighting to try to preserve the Red Rock regions of southern Utah, which are currently under attack. There is an enormous degree of effort recently to destroy any lands that are scenically useful and that actually earn income for people who live in that region. Scenically
useful.
It's like you go there and you camp and you have almost a worshipful experience.
I see. Scenically useful.
Scenically useful.
Laser people might say beautiful, but that's fine. Come up with these new constructions if you want to.
I'm glad you give me permission to reconstruct language. So the Red Rock people are really would. Red Rock Wilderness is basically a magazine of the Southern Utah Wilderness Alliance. Very worthwhile organization. I wanted to mention it in the course of your craziness. And I also wanted to mention the Union of Concerned Scientists, who are talking about the whole question of climate change. Now, in recent years, there's been climate change denial largely in the part of the Republican conservative reactionary crazies, who unfortunately dominate Congress. But since the flooding that has gone on and the weird hot weather that has gone on, particularly the flooding right now in Louisiana, you're not hearing a lot from the climate deniers.
So, well, I think they've quite clearly made their case.
How?
Well, climate change is a myth.
No.
Promulgated by anti-capitalists.
How can it be a myth when the land has never been flooded like this before in human history?
Stuff happens.
Stuff happens.
Yeah.
So there's no relationship between what humans do and what happens.
Well, there's plenty of relationship there, but we can't cause floods. Come on, we're just people. Right? It's for people. The world's really big. There's plenty of room for everybody. Capitalism can grow and grow and grow and grow forever and ever and ever. And it will never bump up against any sort of natural limits.
You've gone mad. I don't know how to deal with this. If I called the psychiatric boys in here, they would say, "You've gone mad."
Yeah, they probably would, but they're from the government. So I don't trust them.
Well, I mean, I think it's really important to reaffirm, despite your madness, how important it is to preserve the environment. I've mentioned it in terms of a kind of quasi-religious aesthetic value. Anyone who's camped out somewhere beyond the city lights really appreciates the fact there's a sky with stars.
Yeah, it's scenically useful. Absolutely.
Yes. You'll gainsay that, eh?
Oh, no, I like the stars.
You like the stars?
Yeah, I hope one day to own one.
Own a star?
Well, yeah, that's the natural extension of capitalism, right? Once we've owned everything
stars are very far away.
We're going to start owning stuff out there.
You can't own a star because you can't get there.
Oh, that not yet we can.
Not yet. That's not yet. True. Not yet. Okay. Years ago when I was teaching in the community college system, I discovered that about 30 to 40% of my students actually believed the entire universe was only 6,000 years old, because that's what they'd been taught in Sunday school.
Yeah.
Yeah. And with that point of view, it's sort of the same point of view that the pre-Galilean notions of the universe were, that the stars hung kind of in a great globe around us.
Well, it's a much simpler world to live in, Joe. You should try it. It makes everything much easier.
Much easier, God, and certainly listen, much more simple.
God gave the earth to human beings, gave us dominion over the beasts of the land and the fishes in the sea.
But humans wrote...
Dominion,
humans,
Joe.
Humans wrote the book that says that.
No, they more. It's more like they transcribed it.
Directly from God?
Right.
So you would support then all of the teachings in the Quran, because those are also directly transmitted by God.
Wrong God.
Wrong God?
Yeah.
Wrong God?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
My goodness. Okay. I would love to hear from people.
Me too.
Other than you.
Yeah, I'm just listening to your communist yammerings. It's driving me nuts.
I can see that you have gone mad, and it's possibly caused by my yammerings. I won't deny that. And I don't know if you can recover in time.
Let's go to the phones.
Okay.
And good morning, my fellow American.
Good morning. Gentlemen, you're in fine form. Abe, you've been drinking the Kool-Aid, but in support of your position, I just wish to point out that our fine scientific Republican candidate assures us there is no drought in California. They're just taking the water to feed those little bitty endangered species fish off the coast, and there is no global warming.
Right.
And there's no fires. No fires in California.
No, there's no problem. That was just newspaper propaganda. You know, it's the media.
Yeah.
Yeah, you may be right. I mean, I am not there. I haven't actually... I've seen pictures in magazines and in the newspapers and on television, but I've not been there.
No.
So maybe it's all a plot.
If you don't stand on the fire line, it's not real.
And, the other extreme of all of this is, of course, the enormously paranoid notion that the government, in order to deal with climate change, is putting chemicals in the air through chemtrails, as they call them, which
are
contrails.
There you go. The scariest part.
Yeah.
Is there are so many people who believe that rhetoric, who would be much more comfortable going, oh, it's all made up. I'm not going to have a problem.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. But Abe has gone mad, so I think it's possible that the entire society may be crazy.
Well, just switch him to straight water out of an uncapped bottle, and the Kool-Aid will work its way through.
Hey,
and then he'll be fine.
It all comes out in the end?
Kool-Aid is the very sort of product that will sit on my well-preserved shelf while the rest of the world burns.
That's true. I actually have drunk Kool-Aid that was originally powdered and stored 14 years ago.
This was not straight-out Kool-Aid. This has been modified to suit this issue of today.
Okay. Well, listen... Okay. I'm glad you're with us on this odd jaunt today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, in this case, the sarcasm is clear.
Well, I don't know.
Abe
is getting a little weirder as he gets older. Anyway, thank you for the call. Let's see what people have to say. 231-8187.
Steve, good morning, Patriot.
Good morning. What a great program. I want to share two ideas.
Sure.
I learned at PSU that need to be reconciled or relevant to your discussion.
Can I suggest, Steve, that instead of sharing the ideas, you sell them? That'd be more of an advantage to yourself.
I am all over that. I have been. Let me jump to it. The two ideas would be the tragedy of the commons, which we see example of in the atmosphere and oceans and even the spring water trail. Reconciling the tragedy of the commons with the Coase theorem, the idea that we simply need to privatize, you know, everything, that need clear property lines would allow for the efficient reconciliation of any disputes in terms of how, you know, resources are managed. And then but reconciling the Coase theorem with the tragedy of the commons is beyond me or the discipline of economics, I guess. But the other idea is really it's really profound in that agreement is almost universal, both on the left and the far right. People agree that the idea of community gun sharing is a terrible idea.
Oh, well, yeah. Yeah, the only way my guns are going to be an advantage is if I have more of them and bigger ones than you do. So no, I'm not going to share them.
But and yet there is a pilot project to initiate a community gun sharing kiosk using the same licensed software for other community sharing programs. And again, there's universal acceptance that this is just the merits of this idea are just absolutely appalling. Sort of a Jonathan Swift type of idea that really needs to be considered even less.
Well, I can see your point. I think that it would be good if every household was entitled by law to five. I chose it as a random number to five fragmentation devices, and two shotguns and three semi-automatic rifles.
Well, The Onion published an article on Chicago's community gun sharing on January 19th, 2014. They sort of developed the idea further to its reductio ad absurdum conclusion. So, but I think it's all we need really is about $45,000 for the software licensing, about $80,000 for the kiosks and the firearms for the pilot project, and then $1.6 billion for insurance. And we could make this happen in Portland.
It's a terrifying thought, and I thank you for it.
Yes, thank you for the call.
All right. He's got into the spirit of your insanity.
Well, he did, yeah. I want to answer his question. How do you reconcile the tragedy of the commons with the Coase theory? I think the answer is you don't need to reconcile them. You know, being a commoner is tragic. You know, the worst thing you could ever be is common. So clearly the answer to that is to, you know, get as much stuff and as much cash as you can so that you're no longer common. And as for the Coase theory, I think that's perfect. We privatize everything. Everybody exercises absolute sovereignty over what is theirs. And then when everyone is acting in their own self-interest, what could possibly go wrong? The free market will take care of everything. The invisible hand will reach down and, you know, and touch you in some sort of way. It's perfect. It is the perfect system. And government and people and communists and people like Bernie Sanders. So just get out of the way. Let's go back to the phones. David, good morning.
Well, as a person down in California, I've got to disagree. We are definitely having fires, and we've also got a problem that came from old landowners, and that was the amount of mercury in the bay is directly related to the old gold mining of 150 years ago. That those old boys sprayed the hillsides looking for gold, and all of that soil and mercury ended up in the bay. And so that's why we've got restrictions on land use. There's always somebody downstream.
Well, that's their fault. They didn't have to live downstream.
You got to go upstream, just like those old salmon that try to find a spawning ground, and there's always a logger up there that's decimating the streams. You know, it's interesting hearing you talking about this. The old Bible talks about Esau and giving up his birthright for a bowl of beans, and so it reminds me of that. You know, it's also interesting thinking about the city of New Orleans and how it got flooded because the people upstream have always got levees. They've been dropping in higher and higher levees to protect themselves against flooding, and so those higher and higher levees force water into New Orleans, and so more flooding ends up down there. They've got to take the burden of what the people upstream are doing.
Okay, I'm finding it more difficult to find a witty rejoinder to that
Okay.
No witty rejoinders.
Yeah, there are no witty rejoinders to that.
To the drowning of a city? Okay, you're right.
Sure. And I'm sure glad that previous caller brought up Jonathan Swift. You know, there's, and in fact, this one of the real dangers of Donald Trump, you know, he's a developer. And if you remember the corrupt Supreme Court ruling called the Kelo decision?
No.
Which allows, I think it's called Kelo versus City of New Dover. It allows eminent domain to be used by developers. Previously, a city or county could not use eminent domain unless they took someone's land for the public good. So they had to build a road or a sewer system or a school or a bridge or something like that, but they could not take your land except for common good. And so the Kelo decision put that on its ass, and this is with this newest corrupt Supreme Court, and they basically say that if a developer claims that he can make more money from sales taxes in that region.
Okay, I remember the case you're talking about now. Go ahead.
Sure. So now imagine Donald Trump becomes president, and Donald Trump has access to the Kelo decision. He could take the highest hillside, he could take the shorelines, and he could basically steal the land from everybody and claim that he could make it better and brighter. He can make it huge. And all of a sudden, the biggest landowners in America would have their properties stolen by Donald Trump through the Kelo decision.
Ah, the irony of it all.
Sure, yeah.
Well, anyway, thank you for reminding us of that. That increases my paranoia.
It's good.
Well, it's not paranoia. My fear, actually. It's a legitimate fear. The notion of private property in terms of land, particularly large amounts of land, particularly lands that are in the public sphere, is a very, very important thing. I like the Bundys, the crazy Bundys. Yeah. Well, I'm going to call them that. They can sue me.
That's right.
They could.
Because this is America.
Yeah. These people, if you remember, started their great public campaign by essentially taking public lands, owned by us, the Bureau of Land Management, which is us, believe it or not, the people.
You're making my skin crawl.
Okay, putting a lot of cattle, without any protection of the waterways or anything, on that land in Nevada, and then when the government, because they never paid for their use of that land, came to take their cows away, they managed to get a bunch of Yahoo cowboy crazies to have a standoff with the federal government. And wisely, the government said, okay, look, we don't really want to have a shootout here. The government backed off. The Bundys therefore thought, oh, well, this is a good strategy. And they then moved here to Oregon. They didn't really understand Oregon politically. And coming out of Burns, they grabbed land that is really committed, dedicated to wildlife. And they made a mess, and they made a disaster, and one of their leaders ended up getting shot, and the rest of them ended up being in jail right
now.
Yeah,
it's tragic.
Tragic?
All those men were doing were asserting their rights as Americans, which trump the rights of wildlife. Why is that so hard for you to understand?
Because it's not true. They were just being, there's this kind of, there is, actually, this is a serious thing. There is this kind of petty notion that anything is based on kind of a kill the Indians and take the land and have what's called the highest use for it, which is profitable. There is this notion still very much a part of our culture, and it is very much counter to the health and welfare of the world. Really?
I don't care.
You don't care?
I'm not going to be around that long.
Oh, I see. Yeah. So your children or your children's children, not worried about that?
No, because they live in the greatest country the world has ever seen.
You are being a non sequitur master.
Well, yes, in my role today, that's what I do.
Okay.
Mark writes into the Facebook page, facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to note, The market is not a subject or a god slash religion, but an instrument. Helpful after political questions are answered. What kind of country do we want? Don't cooperation and competition depend on each other? What would our country look like if we followed Canada and abolished Wall Street and the Pentagon and built community centers with casserole dinners, computer rooms, libraries, etc.? But thanks to market fundamentalists, we have a corporate government with a government of, for, and by Goldman Sachs, corporate tax evaders, and beloved campaign donors. Nature becomes a free good, external or sink, instead of our partner and foundation for future life.
Well, what do you say to that in your role, today's role?
He seems to be critical of that, but that, you know, that's dominion over the earth, right?
Which you say God has given us.
Yes.
I see. And I assume, therefore, that you would never eat pig.
Well, of course I eat pig.
Well,
that,
no, it says in the Bible you shouldn't eat pig.
Especially during football season. Come on, man.
I mean, come on. You don't eat pig because it says in the Bible you don't
eat
pig.
See, that was the old Bible.
The old Bible?
The old Bible. There's a new Bible that was written after this dude was born in Roman-occupied Palestine a couple thousand years ago. That's the new Bible, and it trumps the old Bible.
Yeah, but nothing in that new Bible says that you can eat pig. Nothing.
It doesn't matter. Dominion. Dominion, Joe.
Okay. I think this is amazing. I'd like to hear from some more people with more sanity than you.
Harvey, welcome, my fellow American.
Thank you. Hello, Abe and Joe. Well, I'd like to talk about the runaway greenhouse effect in relation to the free trade agreements. First of all, let me explain the runaway greenhouse effect. What happens is that there are certain gases, mostly carbon, and methane is another. They trap the sun's infrared light, and they spit it out as heat into the atmosphere. And you know, as we burn more and more carbon, we create more of these greenhouse gases. But one of the most potent of greenhouse gases, and nobody knows about this, is water vapor. If you Google the word water vapor greenhouse gas, so as the atmosphere heats up due to the burning of all our coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear power plants, what happens is that it creates more evaporation off the oceans and lakes and rivers, and we get more and more water vapor in the atmosphere and it goes into a cycle. And the more evaporation you have, the more heat's created, and it creates more evaporation until you have a meltdown, and we turn into Venus. The oceans evaporate, and the whole thing goes down. And so it's important that we stop these free trade agreements, because free trade agreements, the fossil fuel industry is at the heart of these free trade agreements, and they would override any environmental laws. And so we'd head straight into the runaway greenhouse effect. And nuclear is one, because nuclear, number one, it heats up the ocean, and also they have these giant cooling towers that pump tremendous amounts of water vapor into the atmosphere. So along with coal, oil, and natural gas, they are a major producer of greenhouse gases. So that's it. The key is the runaway greenhouse effect, and that's what we're facing with these free trade agreements. So we have to think of ourselves as earthlings and work to stop all of this in order to help reduce the carbon and get back to...
Well, before Abe injects his insanity into this, I want to say that I agree with you. I also think one of the things that we're now discovering to our horror is that as this heating up is taking place, the tundra, which actually holds a huge amount of methane in it from old rotted stuff, essentially is falling apart. And it is releasing methane, which is a far more potent greenhouse gas, much more rapidly than anyone thought was possible. So we're really seeing climate change happening on a scale that was unpredictable only a few years ago. And this is happening all over the world. It's noticeable as the huge ice storage of water collapses, and that water turns into ocean water, rises, and eventually will, maybe for the good of all humanity, inundate places like New York City.
Yeah, well, I say, you know, it turns out that solar panels, they create no emissions, they use no water, and I say it's time to get star powered. Let's get solar.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thanks very
call.
Much for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Where to begin?
Where to begin? Go
free
ahead.
Trade,
begin.
Free trade agreements are good, and here's why.
Per se?
No, always good.
Oh, yeah, that's per se.
Yeah. And here's why.
It's Latin, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, another dead language from, you know, a bunch of losers. All right.
No, it's the language of legal stuff.
Yeah, okay.
Anyway.
See, here's why. See, I am a capitalist, right? Now, there are three factors of production. There's land, there's labor, and there's capital. You need all those things to make stuff, right? So I'm a capitalist. I have disposable capital.
You're forgetting about the fourth element, which is demand.
That's not one of the factors of production.
No, it isn't.
No.
It is a factor of profit.
It is. But the factors of production, land, labor, and capital.
Okay.
I'm a capitalist. So free trade agreements make it easier, for example, for me to take the capital that I have generated from appropriating the surplus value from your labor. That's mine.
You're talking Marxism here.
I own the company.
Yeah, yeah.
So the surplus value that you generate is mine. So I'm going to take that and I'm going to take it across the ocean to a place where labor is much cheaper than it is here. Because I have no obligation to you, the worker. I'm a capitalist. My decisions are made completely rationally. That's why the free market is so wonderful. I have no obligation to you, the worker. I can take my capital and go across the ocean to a place where I can hire someone for pennies on the dollar compared to what I have to pay you. Your only obligation, see, I don't have an obligation to you, but you have one to me. Your obligation is to buy my stuff. That's what you do. So I take my capital, I go across the ocean, I pay somebody pennies on the dollar, and thanks to this free trade agreement, I don't necessarily have to adhere to any environmental regulations that might be in place wherever it is I happen to go. Also a good thing, because that interferes with the functioning of the free market and hampers my ability to accumulate still more surplus value from the labor of the people I'm paying pennies on the dollar
to.
So
you like the Trans-Pacific partnership?
I do, because I'm going to get rich, Joe.
Or richer,
yes.
from your stance.
That's right. And getting rich, as everyone knows, is the only real way that real men keep score with one another. The only way you really win in this world, Joe, is to have more stuff when you finally shuffle off your mortal coil.
Okay.
So, yes, free trade agreements now, free trade agreements forever.
Okay, I will pass on the arguments I could make for that. I will leave that to our good listeners to respond. 231-8187.
Who do we have next, Steve? Harry. Steve works for free. Can you believe that?
Yeah.
What a maroon.
Hey, wait a minute. I work for free.
You're a maroon, too.
You're working for free.
I don't want to talk about
that. Do you know what the term maroon actually comes from?
No.
Well, would you like to know?
Okay.
Slaves in South America and in North America and in the island, Caribbean islands, escaped and formed communities with many of the traditions of Africa and were uncapturable. These communities evolved over long periods of time. And those communities were labeled, not by the people who founded them, but by the people who attacked them, as maroon. These are maroon communities.
Hmm.
So the origin of the term maroon in this context is really a kind of a negative notion about people who escaped from slavery and built communities on their own.
So maroon is what the liberals would call a racist and imperialist term?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I don't want to be politically incorrect. So I'll have to stop saying that.
Well, you know, Bugs Bunny said that.
Yeah, well, he was politically incorrect, too. Boy, I sure miss the good old days when cartoon rabbits could say whatever they wanted to.
No, actually, they couldn't. They weren't allowed to say a lot of things. Cartoon rabbits.
Thankfully, now we have a candidate who's going to do away with political correctness, and I will be able to say whatever I want about women and minorities and gays and whomever, because that's my right. Let's go back to the phones.
Greetings, gentlemen.
Harry, good morning, Harry.
Greetings, gentlemen. This is Harry.
Hi.
Hi. Okay. I want to discuss the Bundy case, or what happened earlier this year in Eastern Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the TV show Bonanza?
Sure.
Oh, yeah. Those are brave frontiersmen, heavily armed.
Yeah, but they were good cattle barons. The Bundys are bad cattle barons. Now, through our history, remember, they even had cattle wars, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
So
This was actually a fight. It's interesting you bring it up, because actually it's a fight about whether or not lands could be fenced off for the scientific breeding of cows, or should they be let to be wild and free.
Yeah, and what the Bundys wanted was they wanted more land. So they decided, well, where can we go to get more land? And what's going on in northern Nevada right now, the drought and everything, they wanted to move north. So they decided to come to Oregon because eastern Oregon, their population is dwindling.
Yes.
So they came to Oregon with guns.
Yes.
And they intimidated those people. And it wasn't the same way, let's say, 150 years ago. Didn't people come to eastern Oregon and drive off the Native Americans?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
Same thing, and don't forget what happened in Tennessee when all the slave owners decided to go to Missouri and started all that trouble there. That was only 150 years ago. So people move, and who has the best guns wins. And they intimidated the eastern Oregon people with those guns.
I fail to see anything wrong with the scenario you've described.
Oh, you don't?
No. Of course, the people with the most guns came out on top. Of course.
Yeah.
See, Abe has definitely swallowed a lot of Kool-Aid, which the actual most significant part of it is the excrement of cows.
Uh-huh.
So he has problems. But I wanted to mention in this context, people, particularly if you've been educated just in the regular public schools, talk about, you know, the slaughtering of the buffalo as a part of the civilizing process. And we were told that the buffalo would slow the trains down, so they had to kill them. And the buffalo skins could be made into beautiful garments and so on. And it was all very good. But in fact, historically, the strategy of destroying the great herds of buffalo was part of the strategy of starving Native Americans out of their lives. I just wanted to bring that up. What the heck?
Oh, okay. And one of the biggest cattle barons, believe it or not, was the German king was Bismarck. In fact, they named North Dakota is named after Bismarck.
A city there. Yes.
The capital, yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it.
503-231-8187 is the number to call.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you over? Have you wound down?
Joe, I am just getting started.
Okay.
Man.
That's reassuring somehow.
Yep. I'm motivated by fear and greed like a good capitalist should be.
Are you saying capitalists are afraid?
Oh, yeah. Terribly afraid. Listen to them. Listen to all the, they talk about all the threat from brown people streaming over the border, from other brown people blowing stuff up. They all want all these guns because they're afraid someone's going to break into their house. Yeah, they're terrible. They're afraid all the time.
And it's they're more afraid of persons with a darker pigment than persons with a lighter pigment?
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Why? Well, I don't quite get that.
Well, it's self-evident, Joe. I mean, it was white people who came here and beat up on everybody else.
Yeah.
They had bigger guns. They came out on top. So, of course, those people represent a threat. That's why I got to stay heavily armed. That's why the market's got to stay free.
Oh, my God.
Dominion. Dominion, Joe.
Yeah.
Let's go back to the phones. Steve, good morning.
Hey, good morning. How's it going?
It's great. It's a beautiful day in this great land of ours.
Yeah, well, I was just reading. It seems like Bernie Sanders kind of agrees with Abe since he just bought his third home with, 500 feet of lakefront property, which I imagine is private property. So you can't access the lake that way? What do you guys think of that?
I don't know anything about Bernie's land purchases, but 500 feet, while sounding very impressive, and of course if done in the multiples of millions, is a problem. But, you know, it doesn't really compare with, for example, the decisions of Donald Trump to build incredible golf courses.
At a point, though, we're all responsible. I think it compares. He buys another home, $600,000 home, his third home. It's 35 minutes from Burlington, so it's not even far away.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They could have already driven to the lake. And this is the person who tells us for a whole year, talks to everyone about inequality, you know, about the rich. Mm. Now, granted, he's not super wealthy, but he's in the top 4% as an earner.
Oh, yeah.
I think it just kind of smacks. It's pretty hypocritical. And it's sad to see that happen again.
Well,
I'm here for everybody. It's like, now vacation home.
Okay. I appreciate that. And I think our beating of dead horses is a good ritual.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you for the call, man.
Yep.
All right. Who's next, Steve? Camilo, good morning. Did I pronounce
that
right?
Good morning. I think that this absurdist argument must be taken to its ultimate point, and that's the point of whether or not you can find nourishment in your guns, because the guns are not going to be able to grow food. The food stocks eventually are going to diminish. And no matter how many police or militia you have to protect your food stocks, you have to feed the militia. Their food will run out, and they'll start pointing their guns at the people who have the food. Eventually, all the food will be gone, and there'll be nothing left but guns. You can't eat the guns. And
well, yes, you can. You can eat the gun, and then you become meat yourself, and you can be eaten by other people.
Well, yeah, that's the end of it.
Well, you're correct that
we'll
you can't
be eating each other.
You're correct. Well, in that case, I definitely want my guns. But you're correct that, you know, you can't grow food with guns, but you can go kill food with guns.
Yeah, up to a point.
Well, eventually everything is going to be killed and nothing is going to be left. There's going to be no habitation. That's the ultimate end of the discussion. And there's no army that's going to be able to change any of that. And we'll just have to end up eating each other. And the question is, how do we what kind of table manners are we going to have in that world?
Well, that's a good, I'm glad you're into the analysis of the etiquette of eating each other, of cannibalism. It's a good question. It can certainly occupy the minds of a lot of people, and I want to thank you for the call.
Okay,
thanks very much. I would like to
Well, I want to inject something, because this really is important. I'm hoping people will support the Red Rock Wilderness effort and the effort to save the entire Grand Canyon area, just among other things. But also here in Oregon, there's an effort to create a national monument out of the Owyhee Wilderness in eastern Oregon, which is very beautiful. I don't know if you've ever been there.
No, I have not.
Well, it's pretty. It's real pretty.
It's real pretty.
And it's got a nice river, and it's a nice place. And it's in danger. And it's something about which people in Oregon could actually have some impact by getting their congresspeople to be brave and support it.
So it's scenically useful, as you're saying?
It's not just scenically useful. It's useful for recreation.
Oh, okay.
Recreation creates jobs. Job creates wealth. Wealth creates comfort for many people in an area which is really hard to earn a living.
So if I were to buy this place, okay, I could charge people money to come look at it and swim in the river.
You could.
And photograph it.
You could.
Oh, okay. So it is useful. It is a useful
place. So in other words,
it
has generates immediate capital, immediate utility for some private enterprise, that's good. But if it creates that self-same capital for the government and goes back to the people, that's not good.
Right. That's absolutely not good.
Because that
deprives me and my fellow capitalists of a chance to carve off a slice of that for ourselves. See, this, here's where I think you don't understand what I'm saying. Every decision that you make in life should be weighed in terms of its consequences on your wealth. Why, in fact, would I expend any effort, let alone money, to simply preserve a place and leave it unchanged? That makes no sense. That generates nothing for me and nothing for anyone else. Now, if I could buy it and charge people to look at it and play in it, well, then that's another thing entirely.
Yes, well, and I think on that same logic, you know, robbing banks makes sense.
Oh, it does. It does. Except, see, this is one of those these shades of meaning that capitalists don't like, but we have to accept
as opposed to shades of gray.
As opposed to shades of gray, yes. Yeah, from a profitability point of view, robbing a bank makes a lot of sense. But as a capitalist, I need someplace very secure to park my money so that the money can do this magical thing that it does when it sits there and it grows and makes more money somehow.
Uh-huh.
I need that, okay? I depend on that. So bank robbers then must be dealt with in the harshest possible terms, up to and including immediate death to rob the bank. The banks must be preserved, Joe.
Well, you
they
know,
are too big to fail for a reason.
The reason is?
That I need my money to be safe.
You know, the banks are made of marble with guards at every door.
Right, see?
And they're keeping there the money
that's
that the people sweated
completely
for.
Completely rational. right there.
Okay.
Now, to answer this previous caller's question, to take my argument to its extreme.
You haven't taken it to its extreme?
No, not yet. I told you I was only getting started.
I see.
Okay, see, here's the beauty of about capitalism, and here's what has to happen for it to work. It has to keep growing. Each and every year,
yes,
it has to keep growing.
Right.
Shareholders need more and more money in return for their investment. Workers, for some reason, demand to be paid more over time. Go figure, but they do.
Well, you realize wages have actually been lowered over the last 20 years.
But that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter because people are still buying my stuff.
Ah.
And my share prices are still going up. And the money that I have in mutual funds is still paying me. So as long as everything's cruising along, as long as I keep making money, as long as the peasants stay in line and keep buying my stuff and keep working for the piddly wages I pay them, that means capitalism is working and nothing needs to be changed. Now, I told you that capitalism has to keep growing year after year in order to work. So some have postulated that because we live in a closed biosphere, the Earth is a closed system, right? Things don't enter or leave as a matter of routine course.
No, occasionally in an extremely...
Yeah, occasionally a big rock will fall on us from space.
Right.
But that's an aberration.
Yeah.
Occasionally we'll send a human being out into orbit, but that's also relatively uncommon. It's a closed system. So what happens when you have an economic system that has to grow and grow and grow all the time and it exists in a closed system? Well, I suppose eventually you might end up a bump up against a situation where you've exhausted all the available raw materials and resources in your closed biosphere. And probably there's some ecological imbalances that have resulted. I mean, maybe sea levels might rise. Maybe millions or tens of millions of people might be displaced. Maybe climate patterns will become more and more extreme, such as, we might have a few more cities and low-lying areas die like New Orleans nearly did. These are just the price of progress. And when that time comes, the people who survive will be those capitalists who have prepared and can build themselves fortresses far away from the worst of these effects and far away from the angry masses who are only jealous because they weren't as farsighted and prepared as the capitalists. So natural selection, Joe, will protect the wealthiest when things get really bad. And then once everybody else is gone, the rich can start over again.
So you're an adopter of the perverse notion of social Darwinism.
Perverse? There's nothing perverse about it.
Well,
Paris Hilton is going to survive the apocalypse. Why? Because she deserves it. She is one of the best among us because she is one of the wealthiest among us and therefore deserves to survive. Remember how I said that wealth is the only way that real people keep score?
Yes.
Right. So she's winning.
Okay, I was gonna talk about supply and demand, but I won't engage in that simple notion, which used to be what they taught in school in economics. But I'm gonna let that go and I'm gonna invite other people to call. Who do we got?
Len, good morning.
Good morning. And hey, first thanks for the quote from Solidarity Forever.
Uh-huh.
And also thanks for bringing up the Grand Canyon.
Mm-hmm.
As it happens, I hiked across it.
Wow.
When I was 8.
Wow. Double wow.
So thanks for that. But you were talking about rationality in the context of the climate situation.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay, this is a very brief quote, which I think addresses rationality. Tell a man whose house is on fire to give a moderate alarm. Tell him to moderately rescue his wife from the hands of the ravisher. Tell the mother to gradually extricate her babe from the fire into which it has fallen. That's from William Lloyd Garrison, an abolitionist, 1831.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's if a house is on fire and if one baby's in the flames. What about if it's a planet?
Oh, no, I think you're making a very, I don't know, Abe probably won't like that today, but I think you're making an excellent point.
I had an idea, and it's totally unrelated, of course, but I wonder what would happen if, like, a whole lot of people didn't pay their Visa bill, but a day late, all the same time, all the same month. I wonder if that would have any effect on anything.
There'll be anarchy. We can't let that happen. It's a matter of personal responsibility. You got to pay your debts.
You know, you're going to take vacation next week and the week after?
That's correct.
Whew. That's good. I think you need a vacation. All right.
Okay, caller, you wrap it up, please. We're running out of time.
That's all I have. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Are we out of time?
Yeah. It just makes me so proud to know all these patriots tune into our show.
I just want to remind everybody that the economics that you used to learn that's no longer adequately taught in the schools had to do with supply and demand. And demand has to do with decent wages. And I'm going to let it go down.
Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back at you next week. I won't. I'll be away for 2 weeks. It'll just be Joe.
Uh-oh.
All right.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those Nancy's. Tiananmen Square. It's coming from a field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Minority Cannabis Business Association Marley Natural Expungement Day, August 27th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Village Ballroom in Portland. Expungement means to set aside arrests or convictions. Attendees that have applicable nonviolent cannabis-related crimes on their criminal record will leave the event with their expungement paperwork approved and processed by sponsored legal assistants. Again, that's the Expungement Day, August 27th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Village Ballroom, 704 Northeast Deakum Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on Alternative Radio, author and activist David Corton speaks on A New Story. At 10, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news journalism with host Dennis Bernstein. Today, community activist Jerome Trammell explains the context of the recent violence following the shooting of 23-year-old Seville Smith in Milwaukee. Also, historian Gareth Porter analyzes recent developments in the ongoing military conflict.